Okay, it's August 9th, 2023, 6 o'clock at the MLK Center. We are starting our public hearing for the CDBGDR public hearing for Hurricanes Laura and Delta. So, for starters, what is CDBGDR? So CDBGDR stands for Community Development Block Grant Disaster Relief. This grant usually becomes available in response to a past natural disaster. The grant's being funded by the State Office of Community Development. LCG is receiving the award money in reference to Hurricanes Laura and Delta specifically. The funds we're receiving are being split evenly between two separate project categories, the Resilient Communities Infrastructure Program and the Hometown Revitalization Program. So to get a few definitions out of the way so everyone's on the same page, OCD is using certain standards of the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. They're putting a focus on LMI and MID areas. MID areas are most impacted and distressed. These are areas that HUD has identified as being disadvantaged and majority LMI. LMI is low and moderate income. This refers to households or areas that make less than 80% of the average income. For an area to be considered LMI, at least 51% or more of the residents must meet this parameter. So, for the Hometown Revitalization Program. This program is designated to address the unmet needs for business growth and economic recovery within MID areas as they were impacted by Hurricanes Laura and Delta. We've been awarded $712,409 for this program. Examples of eligible activities include commercial revitalization grants, like repairing damaged commercial buildings, flood proofing, things like that, redeveloping an LMI industrial corridor, so restoring clusters of factories, warehouses, anywhere that's more like an industrial district. Microlending program, which would be small general loans, small business assistance programs, and small business incubators, which is like a safe space for small businesses to grow and learn without much risk of going bankrupt or going under. This grant must be used to benefit MID and LMI areas. It has to serve communities that were economically distressed prior to the storm events. It must be an eligible activity, and the project must be able to be completed within the funding timeline, which I'll cover later. If it is going to be construction, which this one is not particularly designed towards construction, but there are a few wiggle rooms and loopholes where it could work. If construction is the goal, all projects will be in compliance with building code standards and must pass all required inspections. All floodplain regulations will apply. It must implement sustainable planning and design for adaptation and resiliency, and it will have at least one industry-recognized program, which I will define later. Ineligible activities, no exceptions. Only two, projects already receiving federal or insurance-based financial assistance for the same project are ineligible, and any privately owned utility may not apply. So, any questions for the grant regulations on the Hometown Revitalization Program? Okay, and now I'm going to turn the floor over to Alex. He's the one that's going to be explaining our idea for how we could use the Hometown Revitalization Program. Alex.
Thank you, Jay. My name is Alex Lazard, and I work with the Planning Division at Community Development and Planning Department at City Hall and 705 Wythe University. And we learned about the Hometown Revitalization Program, and before moving forward, wanted to just pause and say these are the things that we think we could use the funds for that would be good in the community. And so just the name of my next few slides in our moment together will be titled Empowering Our Community. And we're going to be looking at how we can use these funds to deal with small business flood sustainability and setting up a revolving loan fund. So we propose to establish, using the CDBGDR funds, a revolving loan fund that will fund low-cost small business loans to eligible businesses that were negatively impacted by disasters. Financial assistance will assist businesses in making investments that allow them to do three things: either recover from disasters, lower the effect of current or future disasters, so we'll use the word resilience a lot, and encourage private investment and economic recovery. And throughout this whole idea, our two main pillars are going to be, one, support for disadvantaged small businesses, and two, connecting community development with economic recovery. So earlier I mentioned that this will be focused on eligible businesses. The eligible criteria that we will be looking at are for-profit businesses, community-based nonprofit organizations, community development financial institutions, and community-based economic development organizations. They will be the ones that will be eligible to apply for a direct, no, or low-cost loan for an eligible product. They must be located in the census tract where at least 51% of the households are LMI, and they must commit to create or retain jobs that are held or available to persons of low to moderate income. This program seeks projects that lowers a business's risk of flooding. We'll talk about examples later. That incorporates practices that will allow the business to remain open or become open soon after a flooding event. Create opportunities for new, small, and or historically disadvantaged businesses. Preserve historic structures and provide a critical or essential service to a recovering neighborhood. So how could you use this funding? So we see the main uses in this idea to be the acquisition, construction, rehabilitation, installation, or reconstruction of commercial real estate, purchase of equipment, purchase of inventory, or purchase of professional services that ensure business continuity after a flooding event, or helps a business lower their risk of flooding. And so financing may address any of the following: business recovery loans, preparatory loans, working capital loans, business continuity loans, and sustainable development loans. In our process, we envision that all projects will have some type of completed application submitted to our program partner. Information you could expect to be on the application includes, but is not limited to, what are the objectives of the project? So what are you hoping your project accomplishes? What's the area, the industry, and the people that will be served by your project? Give us a description of how you forecast jobs to be created or sustained as a result of your project. Give us a timeline. What is a realistic timetable of your project? Give us your required documentation. Yes, we want to get your tax returns and your financial statements. And there's going to be some documents that will be necessary for underwriting. That should be expected. So the loan details in the forgivable terms. So we envision this program to offer loans in between $1,000 and $50,000. We've put together a small chart just to discuss this, but basically there would be a three-year option or a seven-year option. Seven-year option would only be used if there was some type of collateral for or with equipment. And we see there being a predetermined interest rate and a percent that is forgivable based on your loan range. Ways that this funding could be used, once again, repairing damaged frontage or roofing, purchasing and installing backup power systems, maybe establishing remote working capabilities, external updates to your facility that improves your site's ability to manage stormwater. We do anticipate there to be some fees associated with the application process. We foresee a non-refundable application fee that is determined based on your loan request and a due diligence fee that supports the staff capacity to manage the loan. And we do want you to know that it is the intent to reinvest any program income back into the revolving loan fund until such time that it will be appropriate to reapproach HUD for permission to repurpose the income for another CDBG eligible use. So we've talked a little bit about our ideas. I would like for you guys to see a video of how another community is doing really innovative things with managing stormwater and becoming more resilient.
Showing people what's happening with the water. People want to know what's happening. They want to understand it. support this type of work, if they understand the system and why it's there and how it works and how it can work in their backyard.
The New Orleans Redevelopment Authority is an agency that is innovative, that serves as a catalyst for redevelopment. But what's so special about the Redevelopment Authority is that it honors traditions, honors neighborhoods, out in the city.
Haley Boulevard is one of our city's major thoroughfares and historic African-American neighborhood. It has been a model for the city in equitable redevelopment and has had great partners, both civic, government partners, and this is an example of that kind of partnership between our New Orleans Redevelopment Authority and the neighborhood that gives everybody what they want to need.
The bigger picture in New Orleans is that we really need to think about stormwater management as vital for moving forward. Our infrastructure is very old. So the city was founded in the 1700s. Much of the infrastructure was built before the start of the 1900s. And so green infrastructure really starts to be this way to sort of retrofit and slow down the water so that we don't overburden our existing infrastructure.
On our boulevard, we've experienced the changing climate effects creating a water retention issue. And so to have a space like this that's creating innovative solutions allows us to continue doing business and not be interrupted. So more projects like this are really important.
Everybody remembers Katrina, but it's not just Katrina. We will get torrential rain for 3 or 4 hours and our pumps can't keep up. It's not a luxury to have projects that put water into the soil and not in the streets. It's an absolute necessity. When you look at a project like this, it's sort of a gentle nudge to up your game.
Thinking about how to demonstrate sort of the main principles of stormwater management. The idea here is to really sort of follow the process of how the water moves through the site, where it goes, and make that really apparent to the people who are, you know, visiting the site. So you'll notice in the design there's numbers. So like, this is what happens first, this is what happens second, this is how the water moves here, how it moves there. The first intervention is collecting water off of the street. Water that falls into the street, drains to the curb, and then you can see there's a curb cut. It holds the water in number 2 for the first peak of a storm, so that water is not getting directly into the stormwater system and going and overloading our pumps. Number 3 is the collection of the water from the rest of the site. So the water around the site drains into number 3. Number 4 is a demonstration of the pipes that are underground. So that's really sort of an artistic expression of what's happening underground so people can understand there are pipes under there. They're moving the water through the site. Number 5 is the permeable paving. All the other pieces are planted and they're soft, but number 5 shows that even hard surfaces like this can actually contribute to the benefit of a stormwater management facility. So all this water is interconnected. It all comes together, reduces the overall impact of a storm, and then eventually slowly drains either into the ground or back into the stormwater system.
This is just an effort to demonstrate what can be done with a little small pocket park. But these stormwater interventions have to be citywide. Just imagine what the impact would be if every property owner in the city of New Orleans just did a little bit to help to contribute. We wouldn't have some of the flooding problems that we've seen across the city. We wouldn't have such a weight on our sewage system. And all of that creates for a better environment and a place where individuals want to live, work, and play.
So that was a video produced by the New Orleans Redevelopment Authority, a key partner in New Orleans' goal to increase their stormwater management tactics. In the program that we're proposing, we've identified a key partner who would play a role in it, and that is the Lafayette Community Development Fund. They are a Lafayette-based community development financial institution specializing in community development finance, and they have the necessary expertise to manage these funds in a manner that will efficiently fulfill the requirements of the program and make a positive impact on the community. With being a young fund, they've already established partnerships with the Food Alliance, Lafayette Economic Development Authority, Opportunity Machine, the Small Business Development Center, ULL's LEAD Center that puts on a lot of the Accelerate Northside Small Business Entrepreneurship events, and United Way of Acadiana. And the CDFI will function as a sub-recipient to manage and administer these disaster relief funds through a revolving loan fund, recapping again, totaling amount at $712,000. They will still be responsible to adhere to all CDBG requirements, including compliance with necessary regulations and reporting obligations. And in closing, I do want to remind that we do have a disadvantaged communities requirement for this work, and we are committed to ensuring that a minimum of 40% of our total project costs in this program being spent in a designated disadvantaged community. This is just a map that you can see. The United States Department of Transportation put together this equitable transportation map that shows what they deem as historically disadvantaged communities. So with that being said, I'll take any questions.
So the stormwater management project that's being proposed for, like, to work side by side with the business loan program?
Yes, the loan would be used to implement the improvements that would also help them be able to manage stormwater better for future floods.
Okay, so businesses can apply for the revolving loan,
yep,
and then use it to implement projects such as that?
Correct.
Okay. And the businesses have to be in those areas of town?
The businesses...
40% of the businesses?
Project costs must be dedicated to supporting the residents of those areas of that town, yes.
Okay, so if I'm a business, I don't know, on the corner of Ambassador and Colley Saloon or something like that, I would be able to apply for a loan?
No, unless you have a location in the impact area. But ideally, this program is dedicated to the people who we consider low to moderate income and fall within the historically disadvantaged communities part of the map. And in the application process, there would be criteria that would be identified to make sure that if a business is interested, that they meet some of those specific requirements that HUD set forth by the program.
So the businesses have to do a drainage-related project?
In theory, and or anything that repairs their facility from a past storm or allows their facility to be more resilient for a future storm. So that may not always be a drainage project on their property. That could also be solar. You know, how can we operate if we lose power and be resilient for a storm? That could be establishing remote working capabilities. How can my business continue to operate and I can keep my staff and I can continue to bring receipts in even if there's a storm? And if I do have to shut down my business because of a storm, what are some things that we can put in place in our business for us to reopen and get back to work as soon as possible? So the drainage project is an example of what could happen in terms of the physical improvements, but it is not limited to only being drainage related. It can also be things that allows your business to open back up quickly after a storm.
Okay. How old does a business have to be? Like, can a new business apply for it? Like, do you have to have been around for a certain amount of time?
That's a really good question. The criteria that we've reviewed from the proposal as of right now addresses financial returns and tax returns, but that's a wonderful question. And
the also, as a sidebar,
yeah.
The grant does specify that it has to be an area or a business that was disadvantaged before Laura and Delta. It has to be impacted. So you couldn't be brand new because Laura and Delta happened in 2020, right? So you would have to have been established and in business earlier in 2020 than the storms.
That's a good point.
Okay. So do you have to have been affected by the hurricanes?
Yes. And that could be your area. You can always tell us how you interpret how you were affected by that storm. That's on us to evaluate whether or not that is feasible and really holds any weight. So it never hurts to apply.
Okay.
And during those storms, we had a lot of road closures. We've been able to get our hands on some photos of some downed trees that cut off certain areas of town from being able to travel. And so that would be considered, just to go to Jade's point about your area and interpretation of impact from a storm, it doesn't have to mean that my business flooded. It could be that the road getting to my business was closed as a result.
If business was cut off from you for X amount of time, well, that's still a way you were impacted.
Correct. Absolutely. So this is what, looking at the requirements of the Hometown Revitalization Program, this is an idea that we think would bring a lot of support to the community, but we also understand that there may be other great ideas out there too. So if there's any additional comments, we are interested in hearing that.
Okay. And I saw you had mentioned underwriting criteria.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's going to be a way to make sure that these businesses are on stable ground.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, and we can have that detailed information available at the sign-in sheet. We have your email address. We'd be happy to send that out.
Okay. That's all.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate your questions. Anyone else in our audience has a question or a comment? Okay. Well, we thank you so much for being a part of this moment. Jade, mm-hmm. would you like to have any closing comments on our hometown revitalization?
Sure. So from here, we do have on the side table, well, first I want to mention that the submission deadline for all applications is within 3 months from the date of the executed contract between LCG and the Office of Community Development. That contract has not been executed yet, which means we still have plenty of time to submit an application or to form an application. If you have any alternative suggestions, please put them forward so we can look at them, review them, and consider them, because we still have the time that if we see something that people really, really want, that actually applies for this grant, we can still consider putting that as the application. And
clarification, that's the application that LCG makes to the state to propose the program for using this money. It's not the application for residents or business owners.
Yes, correct. So your suggestions will be considered by LCG to put that forward as our application. Individuals and companies are not allowed to actually apply on their own. You'd have to go through the parish. So, like I said, there's paper on the side table with some writing utensils for anybody who wants to write down any suggestions or ideas they may have. Please put contact information and please include which grant opportunity you're referring to. And just fill out what your idea is in a brief, concise manner. And this will be put up on Facebook later. For those of you who will be participating via Facebook, same thing. Please leave some information for us to reach you by, which one that you're referring to and what your idea is. Okay. And moving on, we will go to Resilient Communities Infrastructure Program. So that is the second project that is coming about with these funds. So RCIP is to be used for infrastructure, so this one is based more on construction, rehabilitation, restoration, with a large focus on resiliency. So that means that any project to restore or create infrastructure must have mitigation at its core. It has the same amount of funding as Hometown Revitalization does, $712,409. So examples of eligible activities include drainage improvements to reduce flooding, rehabilitation or replacing existing pump systems, replacing or redesigning existing structures to mitigate against future disasters, relocating public buildings from a high-risk area through acquisition of new property, or FEMA ineligible costs. So hard rules for RCIP. We have a tie, they must have a tie to Hurricanes Laura or Delta. The project must be located in mid areas and must be a benefit to LMI areas with a within a delineated service area. And that means you can't have like a small little pocket of property on one end of the parish and then another one on the other side of the parish and then one in the middle of the city. You need to have an actual outlined area that you want to affect. So if you're gonna suggest something that's for a neighborhood, please have a clear defined goal of where exactly your borders are. So it also needs to serve disadvantaged communities that were economically distressed prior to Hurricanes Laura and Delta, be an eligible CDBG activity, and be an activity that can be completed within the funding timeline, which will be identified at the end of the hearing. Construction and rehabilitation. Public facilities being rehabilitated, renovated, or newly constructed must meet an industry-recognized standard that has achieved certification in at least one of the following: Energy Star Enterprise Green Communities, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, or LEED, ICC 700 National Green Building Standards, EPA Indoor Air Plus, any other equivalent comprehensive green building standard program that is accepted by HUD. This is also the case for the Hometown Revitalization Program, where any funds to be put towards restoration, rehabilitation, or construction of buildings. So for substantially damaged structures, if the structure is in a flood zone and is requesting funds for rehabilitation, if the total cost of repairs is 50% or more of the structure's market value prior to the disaster, regardless of the cause of damage, it will have to adhere to local floodplain requirements in order to be in compliance. This means that it may be required to be elevated or floodproofed, and any outdated utilities will have to be updated to today's standard of building codes. So if it's a really old building, if it's a really outdated one, it may be extremely costly to undertake a project to restore something like that. So I would kind of pay attention to those kinds of details. Ineligible activities. Those that do not address an area impacted by Hurricanes Laura or Delta, activities that do not include a recovery or rebuilding component, activities that concern government or politics, purchasing of equipment, operating or maintenance costs, personal property, new housing construction, or income payments, unless granted a waiver by OCD. Activities that fail to meet the benefit LMI person's national objective. Any questions for that grant? Okay. Well, I'll move on to letting Chris explain our suggested use for these funds. Here you go, Chris.
Thank you, and good evening. So one way that we could use these funds is to build a resiliency hub, and a resiliency hub could happen at the Martin Luther King Center here in Lafayette. This would be for that Resilient Communities Infrastructure Program. It's responding, as Jade said, to Hurricanes Laura and Delta. And this is through the Louisiana State Office of Community Development. So choosing a project is the first step for spending these funds. That's what we're presenting here tonight, is a potential project and looking for input on other ideas for project ideas. It's for long-term recovery and or protection from future similar events. So a resiliency hub in this case will be talking about future similar events, that setting up a situation that will improve the recovery from that kind of future hurricane or freeze event or other kind of natural disaster or storm. And so why would we propose a resiliency hub? Well, the concept is rooted in strong community support and leadership. The idea is that it builds from a site that's already existing and well-trusted by the community. It's focused on the buildings of that site and making them more resilient. It's focused on the energy systems of that site, making them more resilient, thinking about communication and situations where we've had power outages or impacts to your ability to communicate to the greater world from your home. A community center, a resiliency hub, may be a source of that. And it's not only these infrastructure components, it also has a programming piece. And so that's figuring out that we have not just the physical pieces in place, but we have the people systems in place as well. And a resiliency hub approach is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to take an existing neighborhood facility and upgrade it, integrate community building activities even more so than is already happening. It's a way to centralize directly into the neighborhood, a way to distribute resources when resources are needed, and just generally increasing the capacity of the site and of the neighborhood. So a little bit more about what is a resilience hub. It's a community-serving facility. It's been enhanced. The intent is to support residents, coordinate resource delivery, coordinate services. And it's important to think about this as before, during, and after. So it's in response to something like hurricanes, Laura and Delta, future hurricanes, future events. And a resilience hub is a place, it's a center, it's a physical place that contributes to the community before an event like that. It also contributes to the community well-being during an event, as well as helping that community recover after the event. And as mentioned before, it's both a physical thing, it's getting the buildings ready, it's also a programming preparedness, it's getting the ideas in place, it's getting the people in place, it's getting the systems set up, it's getting the plan. So, this is also a flexible approach. So every community that does a resilience hub can make their own unique resilience hub that's specific to the needs in that space. But generally, it should offer, thinking about before, during, and after events, it should also offer kind of everyday activities, stuff that's accessible year-round, that's valuable year-round, activities that are specific to that time of disruption, whether it's a hurricane or whether it's 3 days of freezing weather, or whether it's extreme heat, like maybe we're experiencing right now, or even maybe it's a global pandemic like COVID that we all experienced in the last several years. And it should also offer those recovery activities that help the community bounce back after a disaster. So a couple of examples on the programming side. A facility like this could be a distribution point for resources immediately during or after an event. So, for example, when perhaps like National Guard helps distribute water, drinking water, if water supplies have been cut off, or ice for cooling yourself down or keeping your food or your medication cold. Business support, maybe you need to apply for disaster recovery funds. Maybe you just need a place to do remote work. While if you had a business that was impacted by the storm, it could be health and wellness resources. That's all kind of on the programming side. Physically, you could install solar power, a solar generator for the whole facility, could retrofit the parking lot to manage all of the stormwater that happens on site. We have a great large parking lot here. One thing that happens during intense rainstorms or hurricanes is that a lot of water accumulates on the site, goes into the ditches, the coulees, potentially floods streets, and the more we can deal with that water on site, the less we have flooding issues in other areas. We can also do building upgrades, like we heard about the different building standards that may be required for indoor air quality or environmental compliance or energy efficiency. These are all things that this grant can help pay for. And communications, making sure that, you know, if we're not already, making sure we're hardwired into LUS fiber, making sure that we have the ability to continue communications from this location, even during a disaster. We keep saying the word resilience, so just want to touch on that. Like, what is resilience? It's the ability to bounce back. Disasters happen, but what happens after the disaster is the measure of resilience. Does the disaster cause lingering effects that last for years and years? Or is the community able to come together, tap the resources that are available, and return to life as normal, even if it's maybe changed a little bit, but at least life as normal afterwards? And that's that ability to adapt or to thrive even when conditions are changing. It's a resilient communities that have thought about this and taken steps to address it are, they have a high quality of life, reliable systems, economic vitality, and they're conserving resources and taking care of the environment around us. So just a couple of ideas. How could we transform this MLK Center to a resiliency hub? We could do green stormwater renovations to the parking lot. Included in that could be adding something that we've heard as community feedback from other meetings, which is walking paths. We have some already on the park side, but if we can extend them and incorporate them around the parking lot side, but do it in ways that include shade, and that can be integrated with stormwater so that we're actually providing trees with shade as well as helping to deal with some of that water from heavy rain events, that would be really beneficial. We could set up solar power generators on the roof or even potentially in the parking lots, but the roof is huge. We've got a lot of space on this roof, so that's a big opportunity. And incorporate that with batteries, and then even during hurricanes or long-term rain events, even with clouds in the sky, you can still do enough solar generation and then battery storage to have power on site, even when if LUS or the power is down. And during the rest of the year, the power generated on site could actually be a net gain, and that extra power that's more than what's needed could go back to the bigger city electric grid. This, as mentioned before, this could be a recovery distribution point. When you know that the road is not going to be flooded because we've dealt with our stormwater, when you know this will be a resource for community members, so they'll already be coming here, we know it's a trusted site, that also becomes a perfect place to distribute resources when those resources are needed and available. Converting some of the space in the building to be like a business resource center or a community workspace is a relatively easy step that could be done that would provide a lot of value to that recovery effort after a storm or after a disaster. And these are just a few of the ideas, but what are your ideas? What do you think could help transform the MLK Center into a resiliency hub? And what do you think would aid our immediate community both before and during and after a disaster that could be incorporated into a resilience hub here at the MLK Center? So we'd love to hear your suggestions. If you have any questions right now, or if you want to add, if you're online, if you want to add comments or submit, I think we have a survey link that you'll be able to add comments to that. Would love to get any and all input on what your ideas are.
I don't have any additional ideas, but I do have some questions.
Great.
On the slide where you were talking, it was several slides ago, you were talking about infrastructure versus program costs. Mm-hmm. So this grant opportunity is planning to fund both of those?
This grant is primarily focused on funding infrastructure. However, some of that programming should be integrated into the conversation when planning the infrastructure. And we do have the opportunity to use this proposed approach to using the funding as a match to try and secure additional grant funding that's actually a much larger grant funding opportunity that potentially, if we were able to receive that funding, could do not just some of what we're interested in and of your ideas, but be able to do maybe all of it. This is already going to be a several year project. The more money we have up front, the more we can do at once. But if we don't have all of that money up front, then we can do pieces of it at a time. But as long as we start with considering all of the pieces, including the programming side, then we'll be on good track, whatever approach we end up taking.
Okay, because my idea was that if, you know, we have limited one-time grant funds, paying for something like, you know, programming operation type stuff, you know, the funding would eventually run out and we'd have to have a new funding source.
Yes. Yeah.
That's actually an ineligible cost.
Okay.
So programming, I mean, operating and maintenance, not a cost you can use it for.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This is getting things established. Funding for getting things established.
Okay.
And it could be cheap to have conversations. Okay. That doesn't mean that we're paying for a staff person with this funding.
Right.
But to make a plan that
right. That
soft... The soft plans should be planned at the same time as the infrastructure plans, even if they're not funded through this source of money.
So the various infrastructure that you mentioned, do you already have like budgeted line items on how much you're going to allocate toward each one?
No, because at this point it's a proposal. We need the input from, you know, this community input, and we need to identify if this is the viable approach. And as soon as we have those in place, then we can start to get some budget numbers lined up.
Okay. For the idea about the solar panels, I like that. You know, it's clean energy, it's more energy efficient. Something you have to consider too is who's going to pay for the upkeep of those afterward, because, you know, does Parks and Recreation have the budget to, you know, for the upkeep, you know, survey says no, but just something to keep in mind. I also know that whenever there is power outages, LUS tends to restore power in like critical facilities first, you know, like power plant first,
always.
Hospital, always. If this is a resiliency hub, I don't know, they might prioritize this place as well.
Depends on what it's used for.
Yeah. So I like the solar panel idea, but we just kind of want to keep some of that stuff in mind as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot to consider.
It'll take more research, but at this phase, we just want to see how the public reacts. Do they want this project at all? Or do they think something else needs to be prioritized and we need to reevaluate?
That's all I had.
Great. Any other questions or thoughts? Comments?
Great.
All right, well, that wraps up my section. Jade, do you have anything else?
I'll close that out. Let's see.
So the submission deadline is the same for hometown revitalization. They do coincide quite a lot, especially when it comes to timelines. So again, that contract hasn't been executed yet, so we have quite a bit of time. At least 3 months. So that's why we're kind of trying to feel out the public and trying to see what is it that y'all want to see. Do you agree with our suggestions? Do you like them? Are you wanting us to spend the money in that way? Or is there something that you feel your community needs more? Like I said, there's pen and paper on the table in the back, and we're going to have plenty of Facebook opportunities for you to suggest your ideas, vote on them, and kind of show us what you want to see. So please help us out. Let us know if we're on the right track or if we're on the wrong track. So the deadline to complete any and all projects before you, you know, go and suggest what you'd like to see, bear in mind that it needs to be 6 years from the time of the signed agreement between HUD and the state. All funds have to be expended. That's going to be July 31st, 2028. So the projects must be able to be finished within that timeline. Any questions at all? Please contact us when it comes to hometown revitalization. For any technical questions, I would direct you towards Tammy Robertson. She'll probably be able to help you out. And for any grant-related questions, please reach out to me, Jade Boudreau. Here's our contact. For Resilient Communities Infrastructure Program, technical questions should go to Chris Adams, and grant questions, again, go to myself. And thank you for joining us. That concludes our public hearing.